Welcome to the View My Seats podcast for Friday, July 11th. I'm your host, John Lord. You can download this and every episode by going to the View My Seats with John Lord page on iTunes. With me today to discuss Sunday's World Cup final between Germany and Argentina is my friend and View My Seats soccer insider, Herx. Okay, Herxy, just when we think things couldn't get any worse for Brazil, Argentina is on the cusp of their third World Cup. How do you handicap Sunday's final?
I think it will be one of the best World Cup finals that the tournament has seen in recent memory. You see two teams that have completely opposite experiences in their semifinals. Obviously, Germany destroyed Brazil. Four goals over a six-minute span, a 7-1 total dismantling. And it wasn't just that Brazil played so poorly. Losing Neymar, yeah, that hurt. Losing their captain and a central defender, Thiago Silva, that really destroyed the Brazilian team. It destroyed their chemistry. It destroyed any chance of them stopping a machine like the German offense. But it wasn't just the Brazilian deficiencies. It was the German. They were a machine. They were just brutal in their attack. They were brutal pushing forward. They were brutal in their recovery. They did everything right. And if anybody listening is looking for the nearly flawless game, soccer game to watch, go watch that semifinal and just pay full attention to what Germany does from minute one to minute 90 plus whatever. They were perfect on the day.
It was a clinical disposal. And I felt two things watching that Germany-Brazil game. One, I kind of felt a little bit better for the United States only losing 1-0
yes,
to Germany. And I know there's still the sentiment around this country that, well, you can't celebrate a loss, but when you watch Germany just totally dissect Brazil in the semifinal, you can't help but feel and take some joy in the fact that the United States held in there against Germany and only lost by a goal. And the second thing I felt watching Germany-Brazil was that we may have slightly overrated Brazil coming into this World Cup. And I understand that they had played well, that they had won tournaments, that they are, one of the presumptive favorites for every World Cup, and they have one of the most talented players in Neymar, and he was injured for the semifinal game. But all tournament, they never played up to what we thought they were going to play like. And it just looked like they were totally lost against Germany. And I wonder, and you've kind of said this already, how much of that is Germany just being perhaps an all-time great team, and how much of that was Brazil just not being very good. And you mentioned Neymar and Thiago Silva. From my perspective, it looked like their main problem was on defense, where they just looked totally disorganized. And that's probably where their captain Silva helps them the most. So with or without Neymar, I think the more important player that they were missing was Silva.
Absolutely. And you hit it on the head. They were disorganized. They were standing around and letting players like Müller just find open space. There was I don't even know what goal it was anymore because there were seven of them, but there was one of the goals, German player came down the right side of the field on a pretty decently long run, looked like he was taking it to the end line to hit a cross, stopped, cut the ball back towards the top of the box on a pass on the ground. And whoever received it might have been Ozil. Then had 1 second to react, did a quick one-touch pass into, I believe it was Müller, but it could have been close's 16th goal. He one-touched it into the top of the six-yard box, and he was completely unmarked. There was no player around him for 3 or 4 yards, and you can't give a world-class player. Let's face it, anyone playing in the World Cup, you can't give a world-class player that much time and space with 6 yards to go in front of the goal.
You can go back a goal before that, too, and look at the first goal that Germany scored, on the corner kick when they ran kind of like a slip little pick play, and Muller kind of fell behind, and he was wide open in front of the goal, and all he had to do was just touch it in the corner past the keeper. So there was total disorganization by Brazil, and I'm not sure if that is if Germany's performance, and it was a historic performance against Brazil, they come into the World Cup finals as the heavy favorites against Argentina, and I'm not sure if their semifinal victory is an accurate barometer because Brazil was that bad.
I think the game obviously got away from Brazil after the third goal. You know, you go down a goal relatively early in the game. That's a problem. But it's something you can come back from. I mean, we saw it in the U.S. games. You know, Ghana came back and tied it up, and U.S. had to scramble back. So, you know, going down a goal early, you can come back from it. Going down two goals in under 20 minutes, all right, now you're starting to worry, but it's still possible. You know, it's just two goals. You have 70 minutes to play in the game. You can do it. When that third one went in, that's when the head started to hang. And then the fourth one just, you know, it was a complete deflation. It was a reverse Hindenburg, as it were. It didn't go well. And the disorganization from the Brazilian defense was really the key contributing factor from why it just continued to spiral out of control for the Brazilian side. The biggest surprise to me, and this is probably because Silva wasn't there, was they didn't seem to be able to adapt at all to what Germany was doing. You know, yeah. Like you said, the space that the German attack was finding wasn't just on one of the goals. It kept happening over and over and over again, and that's what you need your defense to recognize. You need your coach to recognize it, and you need to be able to make an adjustment, be it a full-on substitution, but that early in the game, you don't want to pull something like that. But you need to worry about positioning. You need to maybe instead of player A marking, the number seven, maybe player B needs to mark the number seven. You need to be able to adjust, and they didn't do it, and it just kept snowballing there.
Yeah, I can't help but think that a lot of their performance, Brazil's performance against Germany, was due to the immense pressure that they've been facing as the host country. I mean, everything was expected of them in this World Cup. The hopes of an entire nation, a nation which has invested billions of dollars in the infrastructure to support these games. It looked like a team that was just beaten and worn down and couldn't continue to go on with just such immense pressure on their shoulders. If anything, it's impossible to say this because these are world-class competitors and you don't like saying it, but it looked like there was, sure, a sense of real disappointment on the team after that Germany game, but there was, I can't help but think there was almost a sense of relief that it's over as well. I wonder if you agree or disagree with this idea that obviously there was a tremendous amount of pressure on Brazil hosting these games and being the favorites, but how much of a relief do you think that they felt that it's over?
I would definitely say there's got to be some relief, especially given the circumstances with Neymar going out in such a, let's face it, horrific way. You know, there are injuries, and then there are back-breaking injuries, both literally and figuratively. You know, that's not something that you expect from soccer. You watch enough soccer, you've seen, you know, the really horrific ankle twists and breaks, and you know, maybe legs being shattered, knees bending in the wrong direction, heads being split open from, you know, two players going for the same ball and headbutting each other. But a broken back.
Yes.
That's just, ooh, it just queasy.
Yeah, they said that if he did come back to play in the semifinal or final game, he runs the risk of being paralyzed. So clearly he was in much worse shape than I think some of us were giving him credit. I guess moving on to the World Cup finals a bit more, you'll have to explain to us how Argentina is more than Lionel Messi, because at this point, watching Argentina throughout the tournament, he obviously, if there's another entity in this World Cup tournament that is facing as much pressure as the Brazilian national team, it's Messi and what he faces back home in Argentina. Who beyond Lionel Messi can make the difference come Sunday against Germany?
I think the first player you got to look at is a player that really stepped up huge in their semifinal, and that's the goalkeeper, Sergio Romero. Making two saves in a penalty round it seems to be commonplace in this World Cup, but that's not normal.
Those were fairly pedestrian penalty kicks by the Netherlands.
Yes, yeah, and they weren't, you know, every penalty kick save that is made throughout history is half guesswork on the keeper. I shouldn't say every. The majority is half guesswork on the keeper and half poorly taken penalty. A penalty kick from a player at that level every time should be going, you know, bottom left corner, bottom right corner, not even touching the back of the net. It should be hitting the side netting. You have the time, and that's what you've trained all your life to be able to do, is put a ball on a dime and exactly where you want to put it. But then you work in the pressure of the situation, and that, of course, changes the outcome. But seeing Vlahar step up and hit his first penalty, maybe 3 feet off the center line? Come on, you can't do that. In that kind of situation, that's poor. That's really, yeah, really poor.
Yet you're saying that the second most important player for Argentina on Sunday is their goalkeeper. But what about this expression that commentators are using throughout the World Cup? They're referring to, they're not calling them a golden age of Argentine soccer, but they're saying, are they calling them the four horsemen?
Yes, the Argentine back line is, they've gelled in a way that you would hope as a fan of any country, that your defense comes together at such a major tournament. Argentina was expected to make a run in the World Cup from the very beginning, but that was more based on their midfield and their attack between Messi, Higuain, Maxi Rodriguez, and Palacio with the worst haircut in history, Sergio Aguero. Their forwards and their attacking players in the midfield are some of the best in the world. Angel Di Maria, who was out injured. These are players that were expected to carry Argentina to every game, a 2-0, a 3-0 win, and outscore their opponents, not stop them at the back and then win games 1-0 or 2-0 with a late goal. But their defense has gelled and has been really key to Argentina moving forward. So you look at players like specifically Javier Mascherano, who has personally never been a fan of, but he has come through huge in this World Cup, and will continue to do so if they expect to win on Sunday.
Yeah, you don't stop a player, a world-class player like Lionel Messi with one defender. So if Germany's going to neutralize Messi, which I assume is their top priority, they're going to do it with a system and a group of players. And I actually think it's fairly interesting, because trying to match up one-on-one with Messi is impossible. But if there's perhaps a team that can do it, it's Germany. And then you talk about how Germany has kind of gone through a transformation during the tournament as far as what their shape looks like. And I thought it was really curious that for a while there, they weren't starting Miroslav Klose at striker, but they were instead deciding to come in with him with 20 minutes remaining or so. And he's the all-time World Cup goal scorer. Did he break Ronaldo's record, or did he tie it?
He broke it against Brazil in the semifinal. So he's now standalone with 16.
He's standalone all-time World Cup goal scorer. And finally, he now starts at striker, and that kind of changes the shape throughout the rest of the field. But if you're going to neutralize Lionel Messi, is there a player or a group of players on Germany that are going to be charged with the task of slowing down the world's best player?
And you hit the most interesting point with this matchup is Germany has been and will continue to be, because it's the final, you've gotten this far, why change it drastically? They've been an attack-oriented team. All of their midfielders are really attack-minded and pushing forward up the field, and haven't had the responsibility to track back and play a defensive game. Mesut Ozil is not a defender. He is your classic creative midfielder that will come back. Maybe he might touch the penalty area in defense for a corner kick, but that's about it. And same thing with Sami Khedira, to some degree, although he plays more of a role defensively. Germany is set up to be a scoring machine, and rely on their defense to make the stops and then get it upfield. Their midfield is not an all over the field box to box is the quote unquote keyword. They don't have the Michael Bradley who will go up and down, up and down, up and down. The way that you need with someone like Lionel Messi, as your opponent. So Germany will be really reliant on their defensive four, if they don't change the style that they've seen success with this year.
The problem then for Argentina is that Germany is so quick when they get the ball. When they do get possession of the ball, they are so quick to move the ball up the field to the offensive side, and they've become the most efficient team at converting chances. They have so many options when it comes to offense, whether it be Müller or Klose or Khedira or Ozil. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. They have so many goal scorers that if they can turn over Argentina and put pressure on Messi, then that's where they're going to really score their goals. As the best possible matchup in the World Cup, I get the sense that no one is surprised ultimately by this final, because these are both very good teams. But as far as getting the best matchup, do these two teams match up about as well for a World Cup final as any two teams in the World Cup, or was there a better final out there having watched this World Cup?
From a playing perspective, I would say yes, that this is probably the best tactical matchup for a World Cup. I think the play on the field is going to be probably the best matchup that you could want to watch on TV. The only better matchup that I think anyone was looking for from the beginning would have been Brazil-Argentina. Because of the crowd, because of the history, because of everything else that would have been brought to the game. To draw a parallel, the Brazil-Argentina matchup would have been like Red Sox-Yankees with all the history and the fans and everything that would have gone on in the 4 or 5 days leading up to the game. But that might not have been the best matchup. It might have been a better matchup with Tampa Bay and Boston instead.
Interesting.
Of course, that is not a reflection whatsoever on this current baseball season, but over in the past years, of course. The other thing that you got to keep in mind, though, is everybody expected Germany to be good. No one expected them to be this good. The complete dismantling of Brazil was really the, oh wow, Germany actually was able to put it together. They're such a young team that there were a lot of questions of would their defense be able to hold up, because they're really playing four central defenders across the back. They don't have a true wing defender that they've been rolling out with any regularity. And would the youth play into this at all? You have Miroslav Klose, who's, older, and more experienced, more, grizzled veteran, but then you got a player like Julian Draxler who might be 18. You got Thomas Mueller, who's 23, 24. This is a very young German team, and in the same way that everybody looked at Spain 4 years ago, all of those same questions of would they be able to put it together at given their youth, it's worked. And they've connected point A and B, and they've made a run and have become a team that is now going to be looked at for the next 4 years as this might be the team. Will that change if they lose on Sunday? Yeah, of course, because then it'll be the same question as there's always been with Germany, that you can't win the big one when it counts.
I'm like everyone leaning towards Germany, but I can't help but feel as if in these types of situations, you do want to go with the best player on the field at the time, and the best player on the field is going to be Lionel Messi. And I'm also somewhat attracted to his story as far as he has never been embraced in Argentina like you'd expect him to be. And a lot of that, as we've discussed previously, is due to the fact that he was, you know, shipped away to Spain and soccer academies at a young age, and how he hasn't won yet the World Cup yet. And he's constantly being compared to Diego Maradona. And so you hear a lot of this and kind of the pressure that he faces in his home country, and he can't help but pull for this guy. And it's not every day that the best player in the world is also the underdog heading into a World Cup final, but that's kind of what I feel for Lionel Messi. But the better team at this point is Germany. So I like most expect Germany to win. Okay. A couple of other things before we let you go here. We haven't really had a chance to connect since the United States lost in their round of 16 game to Belgium. And I'm wondering if you've had a chance to properly digest that game and the United States performance in this World Cup.
It was a tough one. Watching that game was heart-wrenching. The U.S. didn't look good. They were stressed. they were stretched. They were stressed and put under constant pressure. And like every sports broadcaster, every article has brought up numerous times before now, Tim Howard was a beast. And if it wasn't for Tim Howard, that game could have been uglier than the Brazil-Germany matchup. He made some fantastic saves in terms of quality, and he made a ridiculous number in terms of quantity. Most in a World Cup game in history.
For those unfamiliar with Tim Howard, he is a world-class goalkeeper. I mean, he's played in the Premier League for nearly a decade, right? But that performance against Belgium is one of the all-time great goalkeeper performances in World Cup history, without any question.
Without a doubt.
He was making saves that were almost really beyond belief. There were several points during that game against Belgium where you felt as if it was going to be an easy goal, and out of nowhere he just closes down the angle. So if it weren't for his performance, I think we all feel a little differently about the United States-Belgium game. But as it stands, we 2-1, extra time, you know, we kind of feel as if we had a real legitimate chance to win that game. But if you take away Tim Howard, like you said, the boat race could have been on.
Yeah, the U.S. was definitely outplayed. There's no question about that. No one can debate that. We had the best player on the field that day in Tim Howard. That game was really, really epitomized the history of the U.S. soccer team in the World Cup. It's hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. And then when you get that one opportunity, you either convert it or you don't. And in that game, the U.S. held on, had their one opportunity, their one great opportunity at the end of regulation with the ball into Chris Wondolowski, and we just didn't convert. If that goal had gone in, we're talking a completely different story, completely different tournament. Would we have gotten any further? Who knows? Anything can happen on any given day. But it, the overall run for the U.S., I personally believe it's a success. I think we're now at the point as a soccer nation, as a soccer program, that getting out of the group stage will become the expectation. And that will be the minimum that you have to do for a World Cup to be even considered, you know, a 50% success. The 2018 tournament is going to see a lot of people saying getting out of the group stage isn't enough anymore. Now you have to win a round of 16 game if you want the tournament to be considered a success.
Yeah, the way we as fans also view our national team will be different now as well, because for a while, the United States soccer team were thought of as underdogs, but I think that it's clear for watching this tournament that the world doesn't view us as underdogs anymore. I mean, we're a good soccer team. We're one of the best national soccer teams in the world. So expectations are going to change, and it's going to be very interesting to see how the program manages those expectations and how we as fans treat our national team moving forward. Because to be clear, I think a lot of the appeal of this team, this 2014 United States men's national team, was that they were the scrappy underdogs and that we were in the group of death and that we weren't expected to emerge from the group stage. And we did, and we were the underdogs, and there's a lot of appeal there. And we are no longer moving forward the underdogs. So it'll be very interesting to see how the team moving forward embraces that and how we as fans kind of embrace this role of we are one of the best soccer clubs or teams in the world.
Yeah, and the coming out of a World Cup within the United States and in U.S. soccer, the next question is, what does it actually mean going forward? And you know, following the 94 World Cup, the country built towards the launch of Major League Soccer. Following the disastrous 98 World Cup, the soccer started to fall apart a little bit. You know, those were the quote-unquote dark days for Major League Soccer in the country. And the coverage wasn't there. The media wasn't there. So the only thing that anyone saw after 94, 98, really even after 2002, and to some degree after 2006, was the World Cup every 4 years. And if you were local enough and into the sport enough, you got into Major League Soccer. What is really going to be crucial for the sport and also for the development of the national team going forward will be the upcoming huge events over between now and 2018. Next summer, and granted this is also women's, so you know, some correlation but not directly, is the Women's World Cup in Canada.
Right.
Which the U.S. women's team is always a perennial favorite. But they, just like the men's team, they're starting to go through some growth changes with players cycling out, who's going to be in this, that, or the other position, who are the young players coming up, and also other countries now playing catch-up and doing a better job developing their own programs to push the U.S. more. And then 2016 will be a huge year for soccer in America, and I for one, absolutely cannot wait. You have the Gold Cup, which is you have the Copa America, which is the South American Confederation's version of the Euros. This in 2016, it will be their 100th anniversary of this tournament, and they're actually going to be playing in the United States. So so the best teams from South America. So we're talking Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Colombia, and
Wait, is that right? Why was that? Why was that decision made? Why not play that in South America, where the countries are from?
It's all about the money.
Huh?
It's all about the money. They want the exposure. They want
That's really fascinating.
They want the stadiums because also in 2016 you got the Olympics coming to Brazil. And the only country that can put on a tournament of this magnitude for a 100th anniversary, from an infrastructure standpoint is Brazil. And with, the Olympics in Rio and with all the disaster that's happened, from a logistics standpoint around this World Cup and all the bad press, they wanted to take advantage of a media market like the United States, an infrastructure market like the United States. It's not the first time that they've taken this tournament outside of South America. They played in Mexico 1 year. They've split it between different countries before too. So it's not as radical as taking like the Euros and playing them in the United States. But it does seem a little weird. What makes it even better from a U.S. soccer perspective is, in addition to the South American countries coming up and playing this tournament up here, the top four or six teams from the U.S.'s confederation will also be in the tournament. So that means Mexico will get in. The U.S. as the host country, they're going to be in. So we're going to see the U.S. playing Argentina, playing Chile, playing Brazil, playing Colombia, playing some of the best teams in the world in just 2 years' time.
That's amazing. And this is all different than the Gold Cup?
Yes, the Gold Cup is – so the Gold Cup is the Copa America for North and Central America.
When's that?
That will be next year.
In 2015, so that's also the same summer as the Women's World Cup.
Yes.
Where's that? Is that in the United States?
Yes, it'll be in the United States again. And I say that it's 2015. I could be wrong about that. That might be 2016.
And then there's still a chance that ultimately the United States gets the 2022 World Cup.
There's always that outside chance. Yeah. So
there's
the next 4 years for the growth of the sport in America will be crucial. And then in terms of the U.S. national team, it'll be even more crucial given the ages of some of the players when we look forward to 2018. I know a lot of articles have been written already about what is the U.S. team going to look like in 2018. I won't go there because
yeah.
You know, if you had that same article written in 2010 about the 2014 team, DeAndre Yedlin, who? that's not going to happen. Julian Green, no one had heard of Julian Green at that point. Why? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because he was 13 or 14 at that point. you can't look that far ahead. That's why 2016 is going to be the real next benchmark, because you're going to have players like Clint Dempsey will probably still be around, and should still be around for the 2016 tournaments. But he will be that veteran presence, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with players like Jermaine Jones, who could still play a role, but looking forward to 2018, will he? Probably not. Same thing with like Kyle Beckerman. Will Klinsmann treat 2016 as a send off for the veteran players, or will he really use it as a growth opportunity looking forward to 2018?
Well, if this World Cup were any barometer, he's going to go young, so we might not get that send off from some of those older players.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you that you read some of these "Let's predict the roster in 4 years" articles, and it's interesting, but I don't know how you can really be accurate with some of those predictions. At some point, I'm going to have you back on to help me perhaps pick. I want to get into. This World Cup has inspired a lot of us to focus more on soccer, and I want to try to monitor the United States' progress in advance of some of these future international tournaments. So at some point, we'll get you back on, and you can maybe break down Major League Soccer for us. There's a new teams coming to Orlando and New York City, and so it looks like the league is experiencing a lot of growth, and it might be kind of interesting to start to pick up a little soccer in this country. And then there's also the Premier League, and for years now, I, like a lot of fans, have been really kind of curious about the Premier League and the fact that it's on, and I'd say a somewhat convenient time in the States, Saturday, Sunday morning. It's kind of appealing that when it airs, it might be worthwhile to think about, you know, starting to follow a Premier League club. So you can maybe come back on in a little while and help us narrow down our choices as far as who to follow in the Premier League.
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure.
But for now, enjoy Sunday's final between Germany and Argentina, and thanks as always, Herxie.
My pleasure. Thank you.